So I'm going to give you a really truncated version of the message, like really truncated. I'm going to go to a slide. There's a slide there, Debbie, of a piano. It's a piano, an old piano at a dump. This situation occurs a lot today. The old pianos that lived in people's basements, people don't want them anymore. Not even for the furniture aspect of them. And I see a picture like this and it breaks my heart. You see, Ontario used to be one of the leading centers in the world for piano manufacturing. Did you know that? One of the top locations in the whole world for making pianos. We had great wood and lots of it, and we had the quality craftsmen, and we put out masterpiece pianos, especially uprights. They were phenomenal instruments. Now, this was in the days before radio or television, and long before the internet or streaming technology. The living room piano in those days was the gathering point for families. Like the radio and later the TV, people would gather around the piano after dinner. They'd sing songs, they'd play music, they'd have instrumentals going on, they'd sing hymns together, they'd make music, they'd bring other instruments into the room, and they'd make music as families, as friends, as little communities in their homes. And that meant the market for upright pianos, pianos which could fit into everyday living rooms, was high, the need was high. So we got some amazing piano manufacturers in Ontario, Heinzmann, Nordheimer, Bell Piano Company in Guelph, Dominion Piano Company in Bowmanville, the Carn Piano Company in Woodstock, and there are others I could mention that could keep going on. Many others, and these were large production companies. I got a slide there showing you the Bell Piano Company in Guelph. I should go back for a second. There we go. It's big. It's like an auto plant. Maybe not quite as big as Toyota, but it's not small. They weren't small artisan shops. But then the world changed, as it always does, right? The Depression came. And then later, well, radio came at about the time of the Depression. And then later, television, and people didn't need to make their own music anymore. We could watch the Ed Sullivan Show or shows that like that. And we could listen to the radio and hear music that we love, like Jerry Lee Lewis, who just passed away. We could hear his music on the radio. And a certain wonderful tradition because of this came to an end. And these pianos that were beautiful works of art began lingering in people's basements for decades. And then they've been finding their way to the dump over the last 20 or 30 years because no one wants them anymore. And it breaks my heart because we will never see this quality of instrument again. The skill that made them is gone, never to return. Many of the pianos from those years are worn out. They could be rebuilt, they could be restored, but the question becomes why? Why would we? For what purpose? That last piano, if you want to show that piano again, that's my great-grandmother's piano. It was given to me by my grandmother when she knew I was serious about music. When I got it, it was worn out. Was old looking, like the piano up in the hall, what it looked like. That piano up in the hall is actually a masterpiece, if we ever wanted to put any money into it, just aside. I had a really close friend who was a piano technician, and he rebuilt the piano, he refinished it. And I have a 1932 Nordheimer piano in my home today. It was my great-grandmother's piano. She taught piano students on it. She was a piano teacher. I never met the woman, but I got her piano. My grandmother played the piano. My mother got her grade 8 conservatory on that piano, and now that piano has been restored in my home, and it means so much to me because I have a connection with people before me, my mom, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, who I never knew. That means so much to me. But it means a lot more than that to me. See, I can't explain this feeling I have to you exactly. But it feels like I'm holding something true. I'm holding true to something that's important. A legacy that's represented in that piano that goes beyond my grandmother. A generational legacy that's been passed on to me. And it's significant. And I feel somehow that I'm honoring a generation or two before me by holding on to something that was important to them in my own life. This thing, this piano is valuable, it's irreplaceable, it's not just a thing, it represents a commitment to a way of life that's not easily accessible to us today. And it's interesting to me that many of the people that we commemorated today in lifting up to God their wonder and beauty were born around the same time this piano was made, around 1930, give or take a few years. And in the same way that seeing these pianos go to the dump and being forgotten and ignored, it breaks my heart to see some of our older folk passing on because we're losing something really important in their deaths. It's not just them personally. We're losing connection with something that's really precious. We're losing connection to important values and attitudes in life that are essential today for right living. We're losing connection with a grounding of ourselves in life because of their departure. And they lived at a time when their values made so much sense, but today in the world we live in, some of the values may seem as odd if we try to live them out today. See, we live in a time today that we're committed to our own individual pursuits. Everything's about being the special individual. We're so committed to our own individual development that we've lost connection with that sense of identity that keeps us connected with each other. People live in their little bubbles today. We all do. We live in our little cloistered circles. We've lost connection with an identity that keeps us deeply connected with something bigger than ourselves. When I got here in 2006, right away I met a guy named Wally Ziegler. Wally was sick with cancer, Loreen Ziegler's husband, who's still part of the congregation. At his memorial service, I heard his commemoration read out by family and friends. They kept talking about all the ways that he was connected in life to his community. The list kept going on and on and on. This man's impact in his community, the way he blessed the world around him, was enormous. It was almost unlimited. It's not a coincidence that he was born in 1928, about the time that piano of mine was made. And with all respect to Loreen, who's not here today, Wally was not exceptional in this characteristic. I've heard this story in older people's lives again and again and again. People from this generation who lived for people. Of course they lived for themselves. Of course they lived for their families. But they didn't just live for themselves or for their families. They lived for their community and they blessed their community. And I think this generation's Christian faith had a huge impact on them. It orientated them to a way of life that I feel we're losing today in their leaving us. Their Christian faith taught them to understand that their lives were not only about themselves. They understood this in somewhat subtle ways, I'll grant you, but they understood intuitively that their lives were meant to be a blessing. It was given to them to be a blessing to others around them, not just to be used for themselves. Life was to be lived through them as much as lived by them. And see, one of the things I've come to learn over the years that I'm skewed in my own generation. I'm distorted by the values of my own generation. And if I'm going to live out my God-given potential in life, I need the blessings and the insight and the wisdom and the guidance of people who are older than me. People who have understood the kinds of challenges that I'm facing or will face and how to get through them with integrity and with hope and with passion. Now, I'll admit to you, it's taken me a while to figure this out. I didn't learn this right off the bat. I was born on the other side of the 60s that put youthfulness as a priority, not maturity or wisdom, who took the signal of the culture from the youth and the young side of the spectrum of age. I grew up on the other side of the 1960s. We turned the world upside down. Our youthfulness was now the standard of the culture that we live in. So it's been a bit of a rough ride for people who are older. You know, most cultures in the world today, if you're older, you're revered. In our culture, I don't think when you get older, you're revered anymore here, which is a tragedy, I think. And we've been demoralized as we get older to believe that we don't have anything to offer. You know, if you can't fix your cell phone, or if you don't can't fix your problem on your laptop or your desktop computer, if you don't know how to download this newest app or do this newfangled technology we call live stream, if you don't know how to do that, then you don't have much to offer to life at all. And that's not true. It's not true. Because here's a little secret I'm going to let you know about that you already do know about, but just remind you about it again. The only thing that matters in life in the end, the only thing that matters, I know you've heard me say this 20 times, but it's true, and we forget about it all the time. The only thing in life that matters is love, right? And you don't have to be young or old to know this. You can know it when you're young, you can know it when you're middle-aged, you can know it when you're old. Your body can fail, and your presence in the world can be over, and the only thing people are going to want to talk about in your life at the end, the only thing they really are going to want to know about you is the love you gave and the love you received. Nothing else matters. Not the cars you drove, not the houses you lived in, not the fancy trips you went on, not even your camping experiences. They're not going to want to know about those. They're only going to want to know about the love you gave and received. And an older generation, I think, in some ways was closer to this truth than we are. I think today we need to reclaim our confidence in guiding and shaping the world around us in love, not in domination, not in nagging people or criticizing people or you know, scrutinizing people's lives, but lifting them up into the way of love in life. And we do that best by living it out in our own life first, don't we? If we're going to guide young people on the way of love, then we need to be putting love as the first and foremost concern of our own lives. And since it's the only thing that's going to matter in the end anyway, maybe it's the thing we should be focusing our hearts and minds and souls in this moment on. So I'm just going to use this moment again to refocus myself, move it away from me and on to the world around me that God has called me to love. And I encourage you to join me in that. See, that's what Peter was talking about today in the end. You who are mature at Trillium, who have walked down the path of love a long way, who've gone down farther on the path of love than others around you, then love your neighbor, love people around you, nurture them, encourage them, direct them, admonish them even occasionally onto the path of love so that they can live out their God-given potential too. And we don't have to wait forever to start on this journey with our neighbor. It took me about 60 years old before I began to really appreciate the importance of love in my life. It took me that long to wake up. And so I've still got a few years to make a difference on that side of the ledger. But maybe I'll never get to Wally's level of accomplishments. Maybe you won't either. But boy, wouldn't it be great if we could move together, both individually and as a community, along that journey of life. Let's pray.